Chapter 11. Elias. Deep breaths. Now aim. And loose. Bowstrings snap as the apprentices launch their arrows, striking the targets set up across the practice field. Few find their mark, the projectiles embedding themselves around the targets, on the wooden stands, or in the ground. Elias, however, bobs his head in approval.
Better. Now draw again. And remember, clear your minds. Become one with the bow.
The dozen apprentices, most of them younger than Owen, draw their arrows and wait again for Elias's command.
Loose!
More snapping bowstrings, followed by similar results.
Repetition, Elias thinks, motioning for the young men to do it again. It's what sets the great archers apart from the good ones. They may not see it now, but each time they shoot, they get a little bit better, the imperceptible improvements adding up over time.
It's a lesson he had impressed upon Owen, much to the apprentice's chagrin. People his age are brimming with impatience, a shortcoming that is usually only remedied by years of hard work. In the days following his trial, Elias had been given the task of training the lodge's apprentices, those whose masters had died fighting at Dunmore City. It was a responsibility he willingly accepted, eager to have something to do to occupy his time. The days have been long, but the work fulfilling, reminding him of his time in the Emberwood training Owen.
Simpler times, he thinks, recalling the countless hours they'd spent traversing the enormous forest. Before the world went mad. Your quivers are still plenty full, he calls, smiling inwardly at their grumbled complaints. I want you to keep going until they're empty. Then I want you to do it all over again.
Work as a way of driving away sorrow, of extinguishing weakness and keeping the mind away from darkness. Idle hands, idle minds, his own master, Hagen Thatcher, had frequently told him. Hagen was a reclusive man, cold and severe, but his 58 years had made him wise. The man had passed away shortly after Elias became a full ranger. He often thought about what the old man would do with the problems they all now faced.
Probably lecture the demons until they behave, he thinks wryly.
Footsteps on the grass signal someone approaching him from behind. Turning, Elias catches a glimpse of Tamara emerging from the forest. She stops as their eyes meet, a look of annoyance flickering across her features.
You're the only ranger I know who can hear me coming, she says, straightening indignantly. It's commendable. And irritating.
I'll take that as a compliment, he says, walking away from the targets and closing the distance between them. What brings you here, Master Warden?
She surveys the practice field.
How goes the training?
Well enough, he replies, looking back out at the shooting apprentices. These are good lads. They'll be lethal archers in no time.
Good. We may have need of them before long.
She pauses momentarily.
I've spoken to General Moore. I think we may be able to see him as more of an ally in the future. He's not so steadfast toward the king's ruthless plans, merely a soldier following orders. What's more, he understands the gravity of the demon threat. With time, he may be persuaded into coming to our side.
Elias nods.
That's good news. Losing his top general will certainly weaken Aethelgar's position.
Indeed. He'll also prove a formidable ally. Light knows we need more of those.
They watch the shooting practice with appraising eyes. All over the lodge, rangers train and prepare themselves for war. No news has yet reached the Ashwood from the outside world, but the Master Warden has pressed upon all of them the need to be ready. Should the demons invade or another civil conflict break out, the rangers will be prepared to once more answer the call. After a few moments, Elias speaks up, his voice gruff.
I never thanked you for voting on my behalf. You saved my life, and I'm in your debt.
Your debt isn't to me, Tamara replies evenly, but to the rangers. Continue to serve them to the best of your ability, and the debt will be paid.
He nods, eyes drifting back to the archery range. Speaking of apprentices, I've been meaning to speak to you about Owen and Talon. They're good lads, and they've more than proved themselves on the field of battle.
Aye, she replies, giving him a sidelong glance. I suppose they have.
They're ready, Tamara, he says, to be made full rangers.
She stares at him for a long moment before replying.
You've been away from Owen for a long time, and you've never even mentored Talon. How can you be sure they're both prepared?
I've seen enough to know, he replies bluntly. They're young, but they embody everything a ranger should be. We need men like them, now more than ever. And they know how to fight, to think for themselves. They've got better heads on their shoulders than half the rangers I know.
He pauses, then adds with a smile,
Well, maybe not Talon.
Her lips betray a small grin as well, though her amusement doesn't reach her eyes.
So be it. Aside from Yvette, I don't foresee the wardens objecting. We can have them raised.
She trails off, all levity vanishing from the conversation.
Tamara, what is it? Elias asks, picking up on the sudden change.
That's actually why I came to speak with you.
She reaches into her cloak pocket and pulls out a folded scrap of parchment.
Here. She hands it over to him. This arrived this morning, a message from the Nightingale camp.
Elias accepts the dispatch and unfolds it, his eyes scanning the short, concise message within. When he finishes, he rereads it, his blood running cold.
Xander Thel is dead.
I know,
Tamara replies, voice tinged with sympathy.
Elias, I'm sorry. I know you two were close. From my brief interaction with him, the Protector was a decent man.
Elias barely hears her. The words of the letter continue to repeat in his mind. Xander Thel and General Boris are dead. The King betrayed us. The Nightingales are now leaderless. Owen and Zara are missing. He crumples the letter in his fist.
That treacherous snake,
he growls, blood pounding in his ears. His vision grows red, every muscle tensing in his body.
He tricked them into putting their guard down, and then he murdered them.
Elias, they...
He murdered them, Tamara!
His shout echoes through the trees. Nearby, a flock of birds takes flight, squawking in alarm at the sudden outburst. To the side, the apprentices have all stopped their target practice, their eyes wide as they regard their new master. Tamara reaches out and grasps his arm.
Elias, I know. The King has shown his true colors. He's a wicked man, and I swear to you that he will pay for his crimes. But now you need to keep a level head. You cannot allow anger to control your actions.
He meets her gaze, still smoldering.
He's a threat to everything, and you know it. How many more of our allies will he kill off while we sit here doing nothing?
We need to consult with the wardens.
And how many of them are in the King's pocket?
He snaps. She releases his arm and fixes him with a stern look.
You're upset. That's understandable. But you will not impugn the honor of my wardens.
He takes a deep breath to calm himself.
Fair enough.
Turning, he regards the apprentices, who now look every which way, trying to avoid his gaze.
Practice is over for the day.
His voice is harsh as he tries to keep his composure.
Head back to the lodge and make yourselves useful. Go! Now!
They gather their things and quickly jog away from the archery field, leaving Tamara and him alone.
Owen and Zara are missing,
he says after a moment, shoving the crumpled note into his pocket.
Their bodies were never found. Do you think they were captured?
Perhaps, Tamara remarks. A ranger's apprentice and a conclave seeker would make valuable hostages. Maybe he thinks he can use them to ensure we won't take action against him.
Elias grunts. He's a fool if he thinks that.
Turning, he makes as if to depart, but Tamara's voice stops him.
"Where are you going?"
"Leaving," he replies, glancing over his shoulder at her. "I need to speak with Sturgis and the other Nightingale captains. They'll be choosing a new protector, and we can't afford to have them choose the wrong one. I must—"
"And if I forbid it?"
He turns to fully face her, his expression as impassive as a stone wall.
"Then you'll have to put me in chains."
She stares at him for a long moment before finally giving him a slight nod, her lips a tight, disapproving line. Bowing his head, he resumes his departure, making for the barracks to retrieve his things.
"King Aethelgar must be eliminated," Elias thinks, slinging his saddlebags over one shoulder. "There's no other course of action. He'll tear this kingdom apart, and R'hllar will invade without any opposition. The man must be put down."
Nobody stands in his way as he saddles his horse, preparing the animal for a long journey to the middle of the Heartlands. The letter didn't say where the Nightingales were encamped, but Elias knows the general region. He will have little trouble finding them in favorable weather. Even so, he has a several days' ride ahead of him, more than enough time for something else to go wrong.
"Light almighty," he thinks, cinching the girth. "I pray that I'm not too late."
Xander Thel was extraordinarily open-minded for a Nightingale, and he was willing to work with his enemies if it meant defending the greater good. The other rebel leaders are another story, men and women untrusting of rangers and mages. If left to their own devices, Elias knows that they would probably abandon their plan to defend the realm and return to Dunmar City to hunker down for the winter with the hopes of being safe from the demons within their fortified walls. That would surely mean the death of everyone in the kingdom, including the Nightingales. His thoughts take him to Owen and Zara as he leads his horse from the stall. Thinking of what might have happened to them makes his stomach drop.
"Light, take care of them. Shelter them from harm until I can free them from captivity."
The quartermaster gives him a questioning look as he requests supplies, but doesn't offer up much resistance. Elias has been absolved of all his crimes, and the entire lodge knows it. After leading his horse past the watchtowers, he mounts up to depart, his face a determined mask. Before he can leave, someone behind him calls his name, and he turns to see Tamara riding up to meet him.
"Elias, wait,"
she commands, pulling on the reins of her horse.
"My mind is made up, Master Warden," he says. "There's nothing left to say."
"I know that look,"
she replies, stopping beside him and studying his face.
"You aren't just leaving to meet with the Nightingales, are you? You plan on visiting the king."
Elias doesn't answer, and this seems to confirm Tamara's suspicions.
"Will you go alone?"
she asks after a moment.
"If I must."
"Then you'll be going to your death. King Aethelgar is surrounded by the best bodyguards money can buy. His palace is practically a stronghold."
"Every stronghold has a weakness," he replies, "and bodyguards can be killed just like anyone else."
"And so can rangers," she counters, "even the bravest of them."
He grunts in frustration.
"I'll not be swayed, Tamara. This is the only way."
"It's not," she insists, her stony countenance cracking somewhat. "There are other things we can do that do not involve more bloodshed. I implore you, do not pursue this course."
He eyes her for a long moment before responding.
"Why do you care what I do to Aethelgar? You're his enemy now. You helped defeat his army. He'll never forgive you for that."
"I don't care about Aethelgar," lowering her voice, she adds. "I care about losing one of our best rangers. I don't want you to get yourself killed." "I don't plan to,"
he answers, giving her a small, grim smile.
"I've trained for this. It's like my whole life has been leading up to this moment."
She hesitates, looking down the empty road and then back to him.
"Back in Dunmar City, you said something to me about when we were young. You said that I was the reason you changed, the reason you forsook the Nightingales. You said that it's always been me."
I remember, Elias replies, shifting uncomfortably in his saddle. She gives him an odd look, confusion plainly written on her usually stolid features.
What did you mean by that?
He blinks, taken aback.
I meant exactly what I said. What we had. It changed me.
What we had, she repeats flatly. How very nice. And why then has it always been me?
It's always been you because I've never forgotten, he answers softly. I've never forgotten what we meant to each other, even if we eventually went our separate ways.
Separate ways?
She reiterates, suddenly angry. She gives him a spiteful glare, her eyes seeming to pierce his very soul.
You said that you loved me, that we were meant to be together. You said that there was no one else. I believed you, wanted to run away with you, and you broke my heart.
She shakes her head in disgust and looks away, her tone growing more bitter than angry.
I thought that we'd buried this a long time ago.
Tamara, he says gently, I never meant—
No, she cuts him off. It's been 20 years since we were apprentices together. 20 long years. You don't get to do this to me. Not again. Not after everything that's happened.
He sighs, letting out a long, weary breath.
I shouldn't have said anything, he thinks, silently berating himself. I should have just kept my mouth shut and ridden away.
At length, he clears his throat, meeting Tamara's reproachful gaze.
Regardless, you won't have to worry about it any more. As you said, there's a good chance I'm riding toward my death. Once I leave here, you probably won't ever have to see me again.
He nudges his mount, inching closer to where she sits rigid on her own horse.
But before I go, I want you to know that I'm honored to have known you, to have served under you, Master Warden. You're the best person to be leading the Rangers. And I'm sorry that I hurt you.
He reaches into his pocket and pulls out one of the letters he'd written before his trial.
Here,
he hands the enclosed parchment to her.
Well, this should explain everything.
Her face is a blank canvas, utterly devoid of emotion, but her glassy, red-rimmed eyes show the storm raging just beneath the surface. She stares at him icily, snatching the letter from him without saying a word. Elias lowers his eyes, urging his horse down the road, but not before giving her one last meaningful glance.
I meant what I said all those years ago. There hasn't been anyone else.
He rides away without looking back, the weight of 20 lonely years resting upon his shoulders. Part of him expects to receive an arrow in the back for what he revealed, but instead, he hears only the sound of a woman quietly weeping.